To Connecting Hearts, connecting hearts of women to resources, information, and to one another. Presented by Creative Heart Studios, 18 Perry Street and Newton. Now here's your host, Margie Conway.
Hi, I'm Holly Reese. I'm the founder of Warrior Defenders. I'm a certified tactical self-defense instructor, and I specialize in women's self-defense. I teach technical drills for survival skills and education on self-defense tools and how to use them. My journey started in self-defense because I'm a domestic violence survivor. I'm here to empower women, to teach them how to be their own heroes, and to learn today to have a safer tomorrow.
You can find Holly online at www.warriordefenders.com.
Moving is a big decision. Selling or buying a home in any market, but especially today's, can raise a lot of questions. Hi, I'm Amy with Killingsworth Realty. My husband Todd and I serve the Coweta and local area. Our purpose at our first meeting is to learn your goals, answer questions, and provide resources so that you can make the best decision for you and your family. Find us online at killingsworthrealty.com or call 678-525-0047 to schedule a free consultation today to discuss your real estate needs. You don't have to do this alone.
Shopping for insurance doesn't have to be stressful. I'm Christy, owner of Ellsworth Insurance, located here in Newton, Georgia. We're an independent agency with access to multiple carriers for home, auto, life, health, and commercial insurance. We're your one-stop shop for your insurance needs. Visit our website at www.insurewithellsworth.com or call the office at 770-755-7053 to schedule an appointment. We look forward to meeting you soon.
Hello. I'm Pina Payne with Contour Mortgage, and we're so excited. We have just moved to this new company, and we are located at 560 Noonan Crossing Bypass in Noonan next to Art and Jake's, and we have some great products. Our interest rates are better than any other companies, and we also have some great products for the VA. We can do a better deal for you with fees than any other company. We have a lot of different kind of programs.
This is Margie from Connecting Hearts Network. I'd like you to take just a moment and listen to Linda Kirkpatrick explain to you what Family Patterns Matters is all about.
Family Patterns Matter works with youth and their families to help overcome barriers that prevent their success. We meet twice a month with mentoring, tutoring, teaching life skills, resilience, gratitude, and kindness. We also bring music and art therapy. Please visit our website at www.familypatternsmatter.org.
Hi, I am Margie Conway, and this is the Connecting Hearts Network. We have a tea talk for you today. Our friend Linda Kirkpatrick has brought in some more of her friends today, and we have a great story to tell you of recovery and family redemption and, you know, building our families back, which is so important. And we have a mother and daughter here. We have Kelly Wingo and Abigail Parrott. Thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
They were sharing a little bit of their story before we started, and there is plenty in there to inspire you to, you know, work on your own family problems and your own recovery and your own things, because that's what we do. We share our stories so that it can comfort somebody else and it can inspire them to make changes or do what they need to do. So, ladies, you're here to share your story. How do you want to start?
I don't care. How do you want to start out? Yeah,
you start.
Well, I'm a recovering addict. With 2.5 years clean from meth.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I destroyed my family in the meantime, too. Not only my mind and my body, it destroyed everything I had. And I couldn't get clean. I couldn't get away from it. And even with my children out of my life, I lost everything. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a home. Nothing. And I still couldn't. So during COVID, I just couldn't take it anymore. I had drug induced psychosis, and I heard voices, and they were out to kill me, and they meant it too.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to die, so I decided. One of the voices I did hear was God say, "It's time." So
right.
I did it. I decided that's what I was going to do, and I told my children I was going to do it, and they're like, "Yeah, okay. Call us when you're done." And they didn't believe me, you know.
Right, I understand that.
They did not believe me. You know, I would go to them and tell them that someone was following me or someone was in my car and they were trying to kill me. And, you know, and I believed it. And it felt real and right. those kinds of things. So when I would say I was going to get clean, they were like, same thing. Not, you know, this isn't going to happen. And
right.
they were just waiting for me to die, really, I think.
I understand that from the childhood I came from and from dealing with my mom. I do understand that.
Can I ask a quick question? Mm-hmm. What led up to you doing the drugs? What
right.
happened prior to that that made you begin?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I often think about that, but I'm going to tell you, what made me start doing drugs was weight. Was mm-hmm. I was so had no self-esteem and was so worried about being overweight that I wanted a quick fix. And I saw that, you know, at the time, I guess it was crank or whatever mm-hmm. would make you skinny and I could do more work. And I didn't think I had a problem. And
right.
I was building up, you know, I went from, I do hair and I own my own business and it was a very busy business and I had everything going for me, everything. And I couldn't stop. I didn't think I had a problem.
Right.
Until, I mean, even with losing everything, I still didn't think I had a problem. And that's the lie that the drugs tell you, is that you don't have a problem. Everybody else is the problem.
Right. I was going to say that. Right.
And so, you know, not having self-esteem, I never had self-esteem, to be honest. And I don't know why.
Okay. I'm going to interject mm-hmm. just a minute there and bring some of my own experience
yeah.
out. As we were talking before you began about your childhood,
yeah,
the way that you grew up in your childhood,
right.
The things that happened to us in our childhood and what we experienced do come out in different ways as we're going older.
Oh, right. It does.
Right.
You're right. And I'm sure that has everything to do with it. You know, I'm a adult child of an alcoholic. My dad's been sober for 45 years, but my mother was addicted to my father.
Right.
And she said it was okay to be because he was my father.
I heard that so many times. I can't leave. You need your parents, both your parents.
Right.
I understand.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, and I just, you know, I have two younger brothers and I was the boss of them.
Mm-hmm.
I did that well. I didn't do good in school. I didn't like school. I didn't, you know, but I was their parent and
right.
they came to me for things and still do to this day come to me for things that
right.
you go to your parents, even though my parents are still married and live in Noonan and, you know, they tried their best. You know, unfortunately, we don't think we affect our children, or
oh,
we don't
yes.
like to think we do, but we do.
Well, and as being a child of a drug addict and alcoholic and people with mental health
oh, yeah.
illnesses. All right, people, I'm going to stop and tell you I'm not my best today. I did have dental surgery, so I'm stumbling over my words. But as growing up as a child in that situation, now when I talk to people and they've asked me, some have come up and said, well, did that really affect my children? Yes, it did. I can tell you without a doubt it affected your children. You know, I know the feelings it brought to me against my mom because she put my dad, you know, first and everything, even though he about killed her more than once, and where that made me, you know, get cold towards her for lots of reasons. And it also made me determined not to follow in her footsteps, which led me down my own path, you know, that wasn't right. So, yeah, what we do as parents do affect our children.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, even when they're little,
mm-hmm.
when they're little, the things that we do. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I see it now as a grandmother. I see it so clear.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard to deal with, you
right.
know, because I have to, you know, the other part about being an adult child of an alcoholic or a drug addict is that we put so much stuff back in our mind that we can forget things.
Mm-hmm.
And until, you know, that it comes, until something happens that triggers it. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I remember that I did this and I did
right.
this. And so for the past 3 years, which it's not many years for what I put them through, I'm still remembering, oh, I did this to you and I did this to you and I'm sorry. And I truly am sorry and I wish that it didn't happen.
But we are where we are now.
It is, right?
right.
And I wouldn't take anything for the relationship that has come out of it.
Well, and I'm going to tell you that, you know, I was not, did not use drugs and didn't really drink. But just the things that my children endured because of my coping patterns from the way that I grew up, my children grew up seeing and hearing more than they needed to. My daughter will tell you that she remembers me breaking the dishes in the house. And I was like, okay, nobody's going to touch me. So anything breakable, I broke it to let them know they better not come near me. Right. And she remembers that from growing up, you know. And so it is generational. The things that we go through. I can go back generations of my family and tell you, you know, here's how my grandmother was and what my mother endured until you get to me.
Yeah.
All the way to my granddaughters where it's evening now. So when your mom was going through some of her stuff, tell us about your experiences, Abigail.
Oh, man. It just feels cool to, like, listen to her talk about all this, so I'm really proud of you.
Good.
you know, it's been this, like, underlying thing that we just kind of know that we, you know, but we never really talk about it. For me, I feel really lucky that I had an outlet to go to, which was dance, and so I always had a way to get away from everything and escape and just out of sight, out of mind, and I had some really great people in my life who stepped in to be a mom figure, whether they were dance teachers or, like, school teachers or any, you know, there was a lot of women in my life who I needed, like, a maternal person to look up to, and they were kind of there for me, and so I think that helped a lot. Right. I think I would have gone through a lot more if I didn't have a way to escape everything that was happening at home, because I feel like at home I was the mom.
I was in
charge. I took care of her. I, you know, when it was really bad, because growing up, you know, when she had her salon, I just thought that was her. That was just my mom. She was loud and crazy and silly, and, you know.
And she was. She was enhancing it.
Right. Yeah, and so I think I was really naive to the situation for a really, 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 really long time, where even, like, you know, some people at school would say, you know, your mom does drugs. And I was like, no, she doesn't. That's just her. She's just annoying. Like, that's what I thought.
Ma'am.
Well, where was Dad in all of this?
Well, Mike and I divorced when Abigail was in the fourth grade.
Fifth grade.
Did the drugs cause that or no?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I did drugs and he knew, and, you know, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, we lived in the same neighborhood, 10 houses apart.
Okay.
And we thought that that was going to be, or I thought that would be good for our children.
Right.
Which turns out it was or wasn't, you know. Dad was still around. Dad was fighting his own stuff. And that's just coming out, though. But he was there with a home and, you know, tried his best.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's being the mom and seeing everything. That was a whole nother thing, was they were in the same neighborhood, but one had a smaller house and one had a bigger house and one had more money and, like, everything seemed normal.
Right.
But at mom's house, like, it was just crazy, and that's what it was, and everyone kind of knew that, which felt a little safer sometimes.
Right.
But as a kid, you want to go to the bigger house, and you want to go where, you know, there's vacations, food in the pantry, and you know, hot water and TV, and they're buying you new clothes, and so I think that was because we were in the same neighborhood. That was also hard for her, because then she held that against us sometimes, that, oh, you'd rather be over there, you'd rather be over there. And I just remember, and I think it affects my brother too, when they did get divorced, we were young, and it was like, you have to pick, where do you want to live?
Right.
What?
Right.
Why are you doing that? She took me to a lawyer's office and I had to sign papers. And the next day I went with my dad to sign papers. And so then it was like, I had signed papers at both places saying I wanted to live with each of them, because I didn't want to upset anyone.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
But being able to be, like, a little bit on the outside, I was like, yeah, that's so messed up.
Well,
I
remember.
You even put your kids through that.
But I get it. People do it. You know, I ran a daycare center, and we would have couples to the point that they would bring a basket of clothes and itemize what was in it before you took them back
to work. Yeah, we had to do that.
and then I had one couple that they bought a house jointly, and one lived in it for 2 weeks with the kids, and then they moved out, and the other one let me live. And they had an apartment, and they swapped for the kids. Now, I know with my own kids, I try to make sure they didn't grow up the way I did. Mm-hmm. And they didn't, but they still had stuff they had to put up with. But we didn't get divorced till they were 13 and 15. Mm. And I remember sitting in the restaurant and saying, okay, we're getting a divorce. And my 15-year-old got so mad at me, he said, Mom, you're going to leave Dad all alone. How can you do that? And the 13-year-old started crying. She said, you know they need to get divorced. You know this needs to happen. And to me, for her to know that, I was shocked. And for things to go, even though I broke a lot of dishes, I was shocked that she knew that that needed to happen for all of us. But it's parents do that even when they don't know it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you do have one that can provide better. And so it ends up the kids get caught in the middle of that without other complications.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very caught. Well, what's so weird about that is that I have no recollection of that at all. And so that's, you know, that's part of this whole thing is that I don't remember taking her to a lawyer's office and signing. Yeah. I don't remember so many things.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's part of growing up in the household that I did because my mother was a screaming, ranting, yelling, I mean, all the time at my dad, you know, and I always felt sorry for him, you know, and so you forget things to save yourself. So when she says those things, I'm like, what? I did what? Yeah. So, you know, that's hard to,
Anyway. And I know, I will tell you that for the last 5 years since I had my breakthrough, I have apologized to my children so much. They've told me to stop. Yeah. Yeah. They said, Mom, just stop. Mm-hmm. You don't have to apologize for those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I forgave her, you know, a really long time ago. Right. But like she said, we were just waiting for her to die. Not in a we hope she dies way, but it was, you know, she was in this psychosis where she was hearing all of these things. Mm-hmm. And she would say she wanted to kill herself. And then she would not, you know, answer the phone for 24 hours.
Yeah.
She wouldn't answer the door. Mm. I would have her friends texting me, calling me. Sending messages on Facebook. Have you talked to your mom? People at her work. Have you talked to your mom? Where is she? What is she doing? And so it just was exhausting being like, okay, so when we go in this house, is she going to be dead? And we're going to be the ones to find her, you know?
Right.
And so it felt easier. Like, I kind of wish that day would just come already because we just were like, is today the day? Is today the day? Because you don't want to, you know.
Now, my daughter went through that with her dad. Mm-hmm. He would tell them that. And then one weekend he was supposed to pick her up, and he didn't. Mm. He didn't answer the phone. So we went to his house, and she is pounding the car in the driveway. She is pounding on the windows. She is trying hard. She's convinced he's dead inside the house. Mm. The neighbor calls her up to the fence and said, are you looking for your daddy? And she says, yes. And he said, oh, he went with his girlfriend down to Florida last week.
Oh,
and they'll be gone
gosh.
In weeks. And she had more than one occasion like that. Mm.
Yeah. Well, you know, the worst thing about that is, you know, because you do wish you're dead because you can't stop the madness. You know, you even I wanted to stop and I would beg God to not wake me up in the morning. Please don't wake me up. So every morning I woke up, I was pissed. Excuse my language. I was mad. I didn't want to wake up.
Right.
You know, and so now every morning that I wake up sober, I'm like, thank you for waking me up because now would not be the time for me to go.
Okay, so you were talking in 2020 is when you said you were tired of feeling like you were ready to die.
Yeah.
So what happened to help you become sober?
So I just, well, I had all the tools. I knew what I could do. And I just stayed in. I didn't tell anybody this time. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell my kids I was going to get sober. I didn't tell my friends I was going to get sober. Mm-hmm. I just decided that I'm going to do this and I'm not going to say a word about it. And if it happens, good. And if it doesn't, then I knew it wouldn't, you know? And so I just went day by day. And, you know, it was during a lot of the COVID stuff where you couldn't go anywhere and you couldn't do anything. And my ex-sister-in-law, who's passed away now, who she and I were good friends for years and years, and we did a lot of drugs together. But she was one of my biggest advocates, and we hadn't talked to each other in years and years and years. And she was like, you've got to get yourself sober. You have to.
Yeah.
And only for me to be sober for not even a year and her die.
Mm.
You know?
But she was there for you to kick it off.
She was. Yeah. She was.
Yeah.
And she made sure I did it. And so then I went in over to Coweta Force, and I walked to the door, and I was embarrassed because I had gone to NA meetings before, and I thought, well, those people are crazy. I'm never walking through those doors again. Those are a bunch of drug addicts.
Yeah.
And I went in, and they just put their arms around me, and they were like, you're at the right place. Mm-hmm. You know, just come back, and we love you, and we care about you. And for that first time in forever, I believe someone actually loved me.
Yeah, and I've heard that from several people.
Yeah,
the one there.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely, I did. And I went every day at 12 o'clock, which was the AA meeting, but either way, it didn't matter. At this point, I didn't care what it was. And every day at 12 o'clock, and I worked at the time I worked at Atlanta Hair, and these young girls I worked with were so sweet to me. And they would say, it's 12 o'clock, did you go to the meeting? You know, they'd make sure I went.
Good.
And I couldn't, you know, the only thing I do good in life is what I said before was cut hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't even cut hair because my hands shook so bad. The voices were still there.
Right.
And they didn't stop. They told me how awful I was and how dumb I was and how stupid I was. And
that's exactly what Satan does.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so whoever I'd be talking to at the time doing their hair, and I'd go home and I'd hear their voice. And it's like, I hate my hair. I hate my hair. Things like that. Just to build. And the horror of that is terrifying. That's terrifying. And but those young girls were patient with me, and they helped me, and they brought my confidence back, you know.
Good for them.
And yeah, and I mean, when I say young, they were 19 and 20, and that was huge for me.
Yeah.
Because I felt so embarrassed.
Right.
And like the voices would tell me things I never even thought of myself before.
Oh,
I didn't think I thought of myself, you know?
Oh, my mom. I would be riding in the car with my mom, and she'd be having a conversation with somebody over in the mirror.
Yeah.
And my mom, I felt like she blamed me for everything. Mm-hmm. I was her mom, and I was my aunt and uncle's mom growing up. And I felt like my mom blamed me for my dad and for this and for that. And to me, I'm like, I left him a long time ago.
Right.
And I wouldn't have married him. She didn't have to marry him. I was expected before they got married. She didn't have to marry him. But it's I can go back now and see how she felt. Mm-hmm. She was trapped. And that's one reason that I do this. There's a red candy dish over there on the counter in the corner.
Yeah.
I carry that to all of her journey meetings. That was my mom's candy dish. She always had it set out with chocolate in her house. And it was, I carry that because she needed some kind of support growing up and as a young wife and stuff, and she didn't get it. You know, I can see where all that turned around.
Mm-hmm.
But I would ride in the car with her, and I mean, she pulled a knife on me one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ride in the car with her, and I'm an only child. I was the only one that could do it. And so I would take her to the grocery store, and she would all of a sudden get mad at me for something, so she'd be talking to whoever she was talking to over there. And sometimes I was right. I was not worried about her life more than I was mine.
Yeah.
And then my husband, when I had the breakdown, my husband's, he was a mama's boy. He could not understand. He did not grow up the way we did. And he did not understand it until he started taking her to the grocery store and she started speaking to the voices and things. But she was the type that would always love on whichever man was around and blame me for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so when she comes and says, how did you know she was starting to go sober and recover for real this time?
I think because I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was.
Mm-hmm. And I had Avery, and she knew
that I wouldn't be in her life.
Mm-mm.
I knew. And I have a younger son who had children.
Yeah.
And it's hard, you know, sometimes on him to think that he thinks that I didn't think of them as much to want to get sober. But that's not true, because I know that Logan will love me, and not that she doesn't love me, but Logan will let me in his life either way, even if he doesn't want to,
he
would. But Abigail wasn't going to let me come around.
I understand.
She wasn't
going
to let me be part of her life.
I do too.
Yeah, I did not let my kids go around my dad until he died, and that was it. They really never even saw him. And my mom was a good grandmother. They just see her as silly and goofy.
Right,
they don't
see
all the trouble, but she was silly and goofy and loved on them, but she took it out on me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the last 5 years of her life, she lived here in Noonan, and I was able to help her get her own apartment and her own checking account for the first time in her life.
Wow.
And we would pick her up and go to church. And at church, she would be at peace and smiling and just, and I'm like, okay. And when she died, these people came to me telling me how kind and sweet my mom was to them, how she paid them compliments and how she was always such sweet character and so soft-spoken. And I'm like, are you sure we're talking about the same person?
Sounds like my mom and I. Yeah.
But she was able to have that one place where she felt like, you know, she could be at peace and she could, maybe that's who she was, you know, underneath everything else. But I was glad to see that.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, in listening to your stories, you all know I have a 47, maybe 46, I don't know. we've lived through 25 years of just hell. And when the phone rang at night, I always thought it was going to be he was dead.
Yeah.
And like you, I thought, as his mother, I thought, God, just take him.
Yeah.
He loves you with all his heart, but he has told me it's like water. He has to have it to survive. Yeah. Now, miracle happened, and he's been clean and sober for 9 months. He's doing incredible. But I think he said his brother, one of his older brothers, walked by him and saw him sitting homeless and talked to him. And he said, it became a spiritual moment for me, Mom.
Right.
And then his niece, my granddaughter, said to him, you don't know what you've done to this family.
Yeah.
And he said, I think I do. And that was the ultimate moment. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh. And I always say, God answers your prayer in his own time.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's his time. And I would always say, Sean actually died three times.
Wow.
And on the third time, he was in the ER, and they were getting ready to pronounce him dead, and he opened his eyes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I said, God has a plan for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same with my stepson. I say the thing is, I have to be able to trust God to take care of me, because he already has, obviously, through so much.
Yeah.
So when Mom comes and she says that, you said you were pregnant. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that journey since then.
Man, I just remember I made this one post and I was like, ew, I'm definitely going to cry now. that I felt so happy to be pregnant, obviously, but that God gave me something I needed more, and that was my mom. She was never my mom.
Yeah.
We never had a relationship. We were never close. We never, you know, going shopping was a nightmare, and it's like anything that you always wanted to do with your mom, it wasn't good. And I always knew, and I know now, that it's from her own insecurities and insecurities she inherited from her mother, who got that from her family. And I'm so like self-aware of it, to the point that it drives me a little crazy sometimes, because I wish I could just be like, why are you being this way? I just, you know, but I know why they are that way.
But I can tell you from kind of being in her perspective, that where all my drama went over on my kids, that it makes her extremely proud of you.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, heavy. I just remember being like, God, like, my family feels broken. Like, I feel like, you know, my relationship with my mom is not there. I wasn't talking to my dad either, you know. I feel like I'm missing something. There feels like this, like, hole in my heart. And so clearly, I just remember sitting at the red light. He was like, yeah, it's me.
Yeah.
It's me. I'm going to fill all of those.
Yeah.
And he did. And just, like, ever since that day, I just remember feeling like, okay, I'm just going to pray for her. I love her so much. I'm just going to pray for her.
It makes a difference.
And I'm going to pray for her. And I felt more understanding of things she was going through. Even though I wanted to, like, distance myself for my own sanity. But I never stopped praying.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ever.
Yeah. That's what made the difference with me and my mom. I remember going into the counselor's office one day and saying, she's like a leech. I think she wants to pull every drop of blood and breath I have in me out. And they were, well, then stop going over there. I was like, I can't. There's nobody else to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And they said, do you believe she's God's child? I said, yes. And they said, well, he takes care of his children. Absolutely. So if you don't do it, he will make sure she gets what she needs. And so I started praying for her, and I started taking deep breaths and setting boundaries.
Yep.
I had to have firm boundaries. Like with the adopted children, she came through to me one time when she got mad at me and she said, "Well, I know you think I was such an awful mother, but at least I didn't give my kids away." I pulled over on the side of the road and put her in my car and drove down to a parking lot, said a few prayers, took some breath, went back and picked her up and said, "We will not be discussing that anymore."
Right.
You know, it will not happen. So healthy boundaries are good. Mm-hmm. But again, it does my heart good to hear your story, and I know that it's going to inspire others. We probably need to get you in here one day when we got a little longer and just talk independently and more about things.
Sure. We love it.
Well, thank you for coming in and sharing with us today.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Linda, for bringing us our guests.
You're welcome.
All right. We want you to continue to listen on to Tea Talks. We've got all kinds of people scheduled coming up the next year. We are very excited about the people that God brings along our paths and the stories that we get to share. Until next time, this is Margie, Connecting Hearts Network, and we have moved the studio to 3 Bullsboro Drive if you're looking for us. We are the brick house behind Hillcrest Chapel Funeral Home, and you come around through the front door. So send us a message, and we'll be glad to meet you.
Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Hearts of Women to Resources, Information, and to One Another. Presented by Creative Heart Studios, 18 Perry Street, here in Noonan. 404.